And good morning. I'm Susie Jones in today for Laura Oakes, who's off on vacation this week. And we are very happy to have with us on our news line, as she is every Saturday, Mary Meyer with University of Minnesota Extension. Good morning, Mary. Nice to have you on. Nice to talk to you.
Susie, good morning. Wow, what a great time for gardening. I have a long list. Do you have a long list for gardening?
Well, I do. I'm not much of a gardener, but I do have to tell you that before we started this morning at 6 o'clock in the morning, we already had, before everything there, even the cars and all that stuff, there was someone that jumped in with a good question, and I thought that was good because a lot of us want to know in this hot weather, what about mowing your lawn when it gets so hot? If it's already like 3 inches, what do you recommend for people?
Well, if your lawn is wilted and you mow it, that does create more stress. So fortunately, we've had some recent rain in the Twin Cities anyway. So most lawns are okay. At this point, I don't have an in-ground irrigation system, and my lawn is not wilted. So it's okay to mow it. If it's wilted, and the one way you can tell, if it's wilted and you walk on it and you can still see your footprints, then that's a sign that you should wait. Or water your lawn at that point when it's wilted. If it's wilted, don't do the mowing. Wait until it's less stressed.
All right. The next question came in as well very early. Should I pull up all my unused rhubarb or let it die off?
I would not pull it up unless you see signs of disease on it. So there are some diseases where the stems of rhubarb get brown spots on them, or the foliage is brown. If it's brown, you could remove it. But as long as the leaves are still green, I would leave that on because that does support the root system of the rhubarb. So only if it's brown, take off the rhubarb leaves.
All right. This one just came in 7 minutes ago. I have a crab apple tree that is about 10 years old. It seems like this year it's dropping a lot of yellow leaves. Is this normal? Thank you. And that texter writing in from St. Cloud, thank you for listening this morning. Go ahead, Mary.
So crabapples and our apple trees will tend to lose some of their leaves from apple scab. So apple scab is a very common fungus disease that apples can get, crabapples and eating apples. We have resistant varieties that are less prone to get scab, and we have a long list of these. I can actually look up what some of the names are.
Okay.
On our website. But many times apple scab will not kill a tree. So it's more of an issue where it will lose some leaves. It's not as healthy, but it's usually not fatal. But if you're losing a lot of leaves, and if by the midsummer you have very few leaves left on your tree, you might consider getting rid of that crab apple and getting one that doesn't get apple scab. And again, we have a list of that on our Extension website. It's extension.umn.edu. And I will actually go there now, so I will refresh my memory on what are the disease-resistant crabapples.
651-461-9226. Again, that is 651-461-9226. Maybe you are a gardener, maybe you're not. But you have a question about your lawn or your garden or your flowers or those critters that eat everything. Mary, as you're typing, and kind of this is sort of a easy one, I think. Overall, what would you say our growing season has been like so far this year on this June 27th?
I think the growing season has been pretty good. Overall, it's cool. We've had more of a cool month, especially this month of June. We had some heat at the beginning. Now we're going to have some heat at the end. But overall, it's been cool. So this has been good for our plants that like the cool weather, like lilacs, peonies, rhubarb, and our cool season vegetable crops. Excuse me, like kale, lettuce, collards, radishes, things like that. So overall, it's been good. We could use some more rain. I think we're always wanting more consistent rain recently. But overall, it's been a good season so far.
All right, very good. And I know you were looking up resistant apple trees so they won't get whatever word you called it, a scab, I think.
Yes, it's apple scab. So, yes, I'm still looking for this.
Well, if you want, we have a lot of questions already. So we could jump in, or you can, during the commercial break, then look it up, because there's about six questions that just popped in to our text line at 651-461-9226. I'll ask this one, and you can let me know what you want to do. Mary, I am interested in transplanting a rhododendron, and I'm not saying rhododendron right. Or maybe I am.
Yeah. Well, you're close. You're close, Susie. It's rhododendron. Rhododendron. So transplanting this, timing-wise in the season, yeah, it's okay. Rhododendron are difficult because they're big plants. They got a big spread out root system. So the younger this plant is, or the smaller it is, the easier it will be. Dig the hole where you want it to go first and get everything ready before you dig up the plant. And then make sure you water it really well afterwards.
She did say it's a little bit of an older plant, so be aware of that when you're making this transfer.
Yeah, older will be tougher, but it's possible. But if you really have to do it, this is a good time of year to do it.
All right, someone wondered, is this a myth that rhubarb is not good after June?
Well, it's not as good as it is early in the spring, because the stalks tend to get limp, and I would say the texture declines as we go into the summer. The flavor might still be okay, but in the spring, the stalks have the most rigidity, firmness, and they I don't know, maybe they taste better to us because we are hungry for rhubarb, but usually, but in the summer, the stalks are limp. They're maybe more yellow, just not as vigorous. So we usually pick rhubarb for 6 weeks or so in early spring. And then we usually don't pick it and allow the plants to store their energy for the next year.
651-461-9226. We'll take our first break of the hour and come back with many more questions, Mary. So get ready. We'll be back right after this break. 20 minutes. No, it's not. It's 19 minutes past 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning. My name is Susie Jones. In for Laura Oakes. A texter wonders just a minute ago, what happened to Denny Long? We miss him. We miss him, too. He's retired. He did that about 3 weeks ago, and we wish him all the best in this phase of his life. Again, if you're just tuning in, it is Smart Gardens, and we have Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota Extension, and our phone number is 651-461-9226. This is your opportunity to jump in with a question for Mary Meyer about your lawn or your garden or what have you. Anything that grows, I guess. We'll just say that. A texter writes, my Creeping Charlie is due for its follow-up spray treatment. There are spots coming back. Is it okay to do that with the hot weather coming? Thanks.
I would recommend that the listener, the caller, read the label on the chemical that they're using, because it will tell you about the low temperatures and the high temperatures. So usually this is somewhere in the range between 60 and 90 degrees, but it can vary by the chemical, but it will tell you that on the label. And usually you can, at this time of the year, you can get around that by early in the morning when it's cooler. Usually the temperatures will be okay, but that's a very good question, because how hot it is can really determine whether or not those chemicals will work. So reading the label is really critical information.
651-461-9226. Let's go to Doug. He's on the news line with a question for you this morning. Hey, Doug, how are you?
Oh, pretty good.
Your question?
Yes, I was wondering about a small tree at the arboretum called Angel's Trumpet. What do they have to do to keep it alive, because it's only hardy down in the deep south?
Yes, Doug, that's a great question. So at the arboretum, many of our tropical plants that come out in the summertime are held in the winter in protected locations. So not really a greenhouse, although it might be a greenhouse depending on what the plant is. Many times they go into what we think of in the past as a root cellar or a basement area where there's a lot of high humidity and cool temperatures. So we have different storage areas at the arboretum where we put the plants for the winter. Because you're right, Angel's Trumpet, it's a tropical. It will not tolerate living outdoors in the winter, especially in a container outdoors, which is where the roots can freeze, and that becomes even more deadly. So most people don't have the proper conditions, but if you really wanted to try, sometimes you can keep these plants growing in a bright window, bright sunny condition through the winter time. Some of the tropicals can grow year-round. They don't need a dormancy, but because for space requirements, we usually have the tropicals go dormant.
651-461-9226. A texter writes, I have a peach tree. one-year-old I had, it really put away very well for the winter. And when I uncovered it, it was full of buds right now. The two buds have blossomed with leaves. I have a lack of bud swell. What will happen if I leave it alone? Wanting to know about a peach tree.
Oh, peaches are one of our tough, tough things to grow in Minnesota. I have talked to people who have harvested peaches. I've seen pictures of harvested peaches in Minnesota, but this is a challenging plant. Prunus as a whole are not long-lived, and the peaches have the flowers come so early, and our cold temperatures often kill those buds. So this is really a challenge. I'm a little concerned. This person talked about uncovering the tree, so I'm not sure if they're keeping it protected somewhere in the winter. But if you want to grow a peach in Minnesota, there are a couple varieties that can work, but it's really a challenge. I would say try a plum, try an apple, or try the North Star cherry for something that will give you consistent fruit, because peaches are really a challenge.
All right. Thanks for that text. Let's ask the next question. Mary, the bunnies ate all of the flowers off my squash plants. I have a fence around them now.
Oh, no.
But is it too late?
No, it's not too late. Squash will reproduce a lot more flowers. They're just getting going. In fact, we could talk at length, Susie, about squash replanting, because squash vine borers are big problem for us in Minnesota. And if you replant your squash like zucchini or the summer squash, yellow summer squash, if you put in the seed in the ground right now, Now, most people have got their squash growing, like this caller or texter. Yeah, it's up and growing and it's a flowering. But the squash vine borer is going to come out right now or next week, and it can cause a lot of damage.
Mm.
But if you plant your seed now and then it starts growing in July, you will miss the whole squash vine borer problem.
That is a great suggestion.
Yeah,
nice.
So it's not too late to plant zucchini or summer squash seed. You will miss the squash vine borer.
I love squash. I love to bake squash in the fall. I really do.
Oh, that winter
not much,
squash,
yeah. I'm not much of a gardener, but that I do enjoy on the other end. Okay, let's take a call from Dave, 651-461-9226. Go ahead, Dave. You are on the air with Mary.
Yes, hello. I have a peonies bush and some irises that I want to move because we're going to be selling our house soon, and I want to bring them with.
Oh.
And I probably have a period of a month and a half that I can do it. So when would be the best time that I would transplant? The peonies have just finished their blooming. There's a couple of flowers left. This is a massive plant that's probably 4 foot diameter that I planted way back in the early 2000s for my mom. So start with the peonies.
Mary?
Peonies. Okay, so peonies are best divided in the fall. So normally we think about this late August or September. Iris, it's the end of July. So the iris I would do first. You said you have about a month and a half here, so that's getting it. Iris will be no problem. Iris actually are kind of tough, and yeah, so that's not going to be a problem. The peonies are more of a challenge. So we like to have them grow as much as possible through the summer. But the big peonies, this is a big plant. You might end up with three plants here, Dave, in the end, because those root systems are so big. These things, the big root system on a peony, it looks like a tuber of a potato almost. So when you dig that, they will kind of fall apart, and you might end up with two or three plants. I would do that as late as you can before your move, and it's really critical in replanting a peony on the depth. The depth of the peony where the eye is, the growing point with the shoot and the root, is really, the peonies are quite picky about that. But just try to plant them the same depth that they were growing. And most of the times they will resettle themselves out. They might not bloom the first year if they don't like the depth, but they kind of can resettle it out. But later for the peony and then the iris, you could do that once you're into July and they've quit flowering.
651-461-9226 if you have a question for Mary Meyer, University of Minnesota Extension, 651-461-9226. A texter wonders, how fast does aster yellow's disease affect a purple aster? We are not sure if it has that disease or bugs or both.
Well, aster yellows can affect many plants that are the composites or the daisies, and they basically just start looking really weird. I mean, really weird. But we usually see the weirdness in flowers. Not so much the foliage, but it's in the flowers. And so asters haven't flowered yet. So I would say at this point, I would try to match it up with some pictures that you can find online. Now, at our extension.umn.edu website, we have what's wrong with this plant. And we have a lot of pictures. And the aster yellows does affect so many plants. You can look at the pictures that are there online. I think most of those are probably going to be flowers, but you might find some that are foliage. So maybe you could match it up that way. You can also take a picture of it and send it to Ask a Master Gardener, which is another link in the extension.umn.edu website. And, you know, the treatment for aster yellows is remove that plant. So if you've got a lot of asters or a clump of it or something and just one plant looks strange, you could dig that plant out and get rid of it. Mm. And then that way can possibly prevent the whole rest of the asters from getting it, or cone flowers. So many other things get that.
Okay. It is 8:30 and we are going to take our bottom of the hour break for a few commercial messages and a check of the weather forecast. Back with more of your questions on Smart Gardens on WCCO. And we are back with the second half of our show that we talk all about everything that grows. Mary Meyer is with us from the University of Minnesota Extension. Mary, before we get started with more calls and texts at 651-461-9226, I understand you've come up with an answer about crab apple trees.
Yes, so we had a question on apple scab, which is a foliar disease on crab apples and apple trees, yellow leaves falling. There are crab apples that are resistant to apple scab. So certain kinds, older crab apples tend to really get this badly, but newer kinds don't. So we do have this list on Extension's website, but I'll read off a few here. There are about 30 that are disease resistant. So some of the common ones are Adirondack, Bob White, Coral Burst, Donald Wyman, let's see here, Jewelberry, Indian Summer, Prairie Fire, Red Jewel, Tina. Now, these are all crab apples that do not get apple scab so much. So you can look for these in the garden centers. You can look up this list on extension.umn.edu.
651-461-9226. If you have a question for Mary Meyer with University of Minnesota Extension, we'll start with this one. Good morning. I planted 12 cucumber seeds and the plants look great, but I only see female flowers. Is there anything I can do? I didn't know there were male and female flowers, Mary.
Oh, yes. Yes, this happens. So certain plants will do this, and our squashes, the cucumbers, on one vine will have flowers that are male and female. And the female flowers have the tiny little fruit behind the yellow big blossom. Male flowers do not. So we depend on pollinators to transfer this pollen from the male to the female flower, and then that fruit will develop after it's been pollinated. But the type of flower that comes out is often dependent on the weather. So cooler conditions or really hot conditions can affect if they're male flowers or female flowers that come out. So in the end, it usually works out fine. But in the beginning, we often see one or the other. Usually it's the male flowers predominate in the beginning. But now this caller is saying they see more female flowers. So we can do hand pollination. You can take pollen from the male flower with a Q-tip or with your finger even, and transfer it to the female flower. But the pollinators, the bees do this much more effectively than we do. And in the end, it should all work out.
Oh, good. Okay. Next texter at 651-461-9226. Can I naturally kill Creeping Charlie? Does it ever die on its own? I say no. I say it's going to be a lie. I have so much Creeping Charlie, Mary. Oh, I hate it.
Oh, we do this. We do Creeping Charlie really well in Minnesota. We've got great growing conditions for it. So I would say naturally dying would only be in the extreme situations of you have the environment that's so terrible, no plant is going to live. So naturally dying doesn't it really happened much. I think the caller or texter might also be wondering, how can I get rid of it without a chemical? So solarization is really the answer. Now, solarization means you cover the soil with something so that it gets very hot in there, so that the plants die and the seeds die. And so You can do this with newspaper. You can do this with black plastic. Clear plastic doesn't work so well, but you put something over the soil to get it hot and kill everything that's in there. Now, this doesn't look very good for most people, and it takes a while. I mean, it takes months. So, you could try this in a small area and see how it goes for you. If you put down cardboard or you put mulch and something on top of that, then it can maybe look better. But it's this exclusion from light and usually making it so hot that the seeds and plants are killed.
Well, there's one way to handle it. 651-461-9226. Diana has a question for you this morning on our phone line. Hi, Diana.
Good morning.
What's your question?
We have a Honeycrisp apple tree, and it's a rather young tree, but we've had apples on it for maybe 4 or 5 years. But every year, all the apples, every one of them, has little teeny, you know, almost look like needle pricks all over it. And we cut them open, and it isn't coming from the inside, it's coming from the outside. Is it possible that bees could be eating these apples or, you know, coming to them for their nectar? Because we do have a bee tree that's not too far away.
Wow. So I think what you're saying, Diana, is that you see a pinprick on the outside, but the inside of the apple looks okay. And so if that's it, if that's correct, then yes, I would say something else. Now, it's amazing, but sometimes wildlife and bees, they're searching for a source of moisture or water. So in the years that we had dry in August, when my apple tree was developing, I saw the squirrels go after the apples like crazy. And I think they were there for the moisture or the water content of the apple. So, yeah, I would say that something like that is going on. When you first started talking, I thought it was going to be apple maggots because they look like a dimple or a pinprick on the outside, but the inside's a disaster because the maggot, the worm, is on the inside making a big mess. But as long as it's more of an external thing, I would say yes. Now, the other thing might be birds. But a bird usually makes a larger indentation, like really, you could see where it's pecked at it and eaten a piece of the apple.
All right, 651-461-9226. You can call in and ask your question directly to Mary, or you can text it to 651-461-9226, and I will ask it for you. This texter wonders about shrubs and cutting them back. What about trimming your shrubs right now? I have a huge shrub, but I'm terrified to trim it because I'm sure I'll mess it up.
Depending on what it is, Susie, the kind of shrub, you might not mess it up. And if it's a big old shrub, if it's evergreen, you have to be a little bit more careful than the ones that lose their leaves, the deciduous ones. But things like a lilac, forsythia, those that are losing their leaves, this is a good time to do pruning on many of our shrubs. They will still recover well before the winter sets in. I have a boxwood hedge, and I prune it once a year, and now I'm faced with pruning it in this heat that's coming up. But I try to prune it once a year, late June, early July, and that way I only have to do it once a year to keep its head shape. So depending on what kind of a shrub it is, you can take off most of the outside, or you can go down to the ground and take off some main stems as well. So you can thin out a third of the plant by taking off main stems at the ground level, or you can do more light trimming on that more of the outside branches. So we do have a lot of videos on pruning on the Extension website. So extension.umn.edu has some great pruning videos. Things like apple trees, our fruit trees, are really tough for pruning, and we definitely have videos on those. The shrubs, cutting out some of the older big whole stems and then taking off some of the outside branches, that's kind of the way to go.
Mary, do you always recommend doing it by hand, or what if, like, a cutter, you know, something you could rent, or a mechanical device to help you?
I usually do it by hand, and even this boxwood hedge that I talked about. So a hedge, I use a hedge trimmer, the big old hand hedge trimmer, but I try to get it sharpened. The blades get really sharp every year because that, to me, makes the best cut. You can use the electric trimmers, and if you have a lot to do, that's a way to go. I find the electric trimmers often don't do as good a job as being sharp and cutting everything off, and they tend to leave a lot of half-cut things.
Hmm, okay.
But so I like the sharp hedge trimmers, which are the hardest amount of work.
Yeah, right. I like the electronic one. Listen, yeah. Let us take
a caller did drop, by the way. So,
okay,
so
fine.
Tom, if you have
Tom,
to call on, call
you can
back.
Call yeah. back. We have a lot more questions, but let's take our final break of the hour because it is 8:45 on Newstalk 830 WCCO. All right, we got about 10 minutes to jam out these questions. 651-461-9226, Mary Meyer, University of Minnesota Extension, 651-461-9226. We lost Tom, and we got him back. Tom, you're on the air with Mary Meyer. Go ahead and ask your question.
I've got about 9 clematis on one of my fences, and I've grown them for years, and every once in a while, one will just get that thing with this up and die, that wilt or whatever. This year, they are one by one all dying. Are they catching it from each other? Are those places where I should plant another one? Or what's going on? I've never lost this many at one time.
Oh, gosh. I'm so sorry to hear that, Tom. Yes, the clematis wilt can take plants out and kind of take the whole thing. It's a sudden collapse. Usually the foliage gets black and then the whole thing dies. It can vary by kind, which ones are which ones get it, but it's really difficult to control. You really have to discard the material when you take it out and get rid of it. I don't know what would suddenly cause this, especially when you've had them for several years. I don't know if there are resistant ones for this. I don't really think I've heard of that. But basically, it's getting rid of the ones that are dead, pruning out anything that's dead. They like to have cooler root systems, and they do like to have support. So they need a support system. But other than that, I'm not sure what to tell you. You might be able to take pictures of this and send it into the Ask a Master Gardener, or look for pictures. When you see the pictures online, they basically just look like a wilted vine. I'm really sorry to hear this, but it's hard to think of something beyond clematis wilt as to what it is.
All right, very good. 651-461-9226. A texter writes, my tomatoes are really spindly on top. Never had this before. The bottom half looks fine. Is it spindly or spindly or spindly or what am I saying?
Yeah, spindly. I think spindly. That just means they're really smaller and younger. Sometimes this is just a case of what they look like with the specific cultivar when they're coming out. They usually look very small, but then they get bigger as they are growing. If anything, I would pay attention to how much you're fertilizing them because tomatoes are heavy feeders. They do like a lot of fertilizer. I usually use a slower release fertilizer when I plant them in the hole. And then if you see yellowing, really pale coloring on the foliage or really small leaves, you could consider using a liquid fertilizer that you put on once a week according to what the directions are for the amount. So I'd consider using liquid fertilizer on these.
All right. Another texter writes, I have a maple hybrid that's about 13 years old that was planted in this development last year. It started changing colors in August, and now this year it's changing colors now, and it has about half of the leaves on it as it did the previous year. Any ideas?
Yeah, this is a bad sign. So usually the premature fall coloring indicates the plant's under stress and weak. But seeing this in June, fall coloring, really not a good sign. The fact that it's only got half the foliage on it, yeah, another bad sign. So my first guess is that this might be stem girdling roots. We see this a lot with trees, and especially maples. The plant has been planted too deeply, and then the stems, the roots are actually curling around the stem itself and cutting off the circulation. So if you cannot see any root flare, this is where the trunk of the tree meets the ground. If this is perpendicular, 100% perpendicular, then it's very likely stem girdling roots. You want to see a flare or a gradual, or even the roots on top of the soil spreading outwards. If you cannot see that, you can't see any roots on a maple tree, and it has that straight stem going in the ground, it's very likely the stem girdling roots. And there's not really much you can do about it at this point, because the tree itself will just get weaker and weaker, and many times falls over in a storm, and then you can see it only has a very small root system on one side of it. So it's not a good sign.
Okay.
Sorry.
I know. 651-461-9226, a texter writes, we have a huge pollinator garden in our backyard, and we continue to grow it each year normally. By this time, we have a ton of bumblebees and honeybees all over our yard, even though our allium has not been blooming for a while. I'm not seeing anything. Have you seen anything about this? There's not as many pollinators this spring.
I have not seen that, but you could go on to the University of Minnesota has the bee website, and there are actually people who track bumblebees and keep counts and everything of them, but I have not heard anyone talking about that, a lack of pollinators. They are affected by weather conditions as well. Many of the pollinators actually like hotter conditions. A lot of our butterflies, the Lepidoptera, really like hot conditions. So when the weather has been cooler, they are not they don't develop as quickly. But I have not seen that there's a shortage or less pollinators, okay, specifically this year.
651-461-9226. It is 8:56. We still have time for some more questions as well. This texter writes, I have a volunteer white oak tree I would like to move. Before I proceed, this person wants to know how to proceed, but what is a volunteer tree?
So this tree grew on its own from an acorn that was probably planted by a squirrel or a blue jay or something like that. So it's come up on its own where you didn't expect it to be growing. So the smaller this tree is, the more likely you can definitely move it. But oaks will start out with a tap root, which means one main root going directly down in the soil. And it's hard to get all of that root. So you can try moving it. The younger it is, the easier it is. So by young, I mean a foot tall. little. The taller this gets, you know, 3 or 4 feet, really difficult to start moving that tree because it will have a tremendous root system going on its own and great. So if there's any way you can keep it where it is, that will be much better chance for success. But I would just say, you know, this happens a lot, really. So look around your property. If you've got one, you likely have others that are, and so look for one that's small.
What's the website again before we run out of time?
Oh, yeah, extension.umn.edu.
Mary, make it a great week.
Thank you, Susie. Always fun to talk about gardening.
Yes. Mary Meyer, University of Minnesota Extension, with us on WCCO.